Having a fantastic day. It is Friday, September 1st. I know it's been a while since I've done technically one on this series. I've kind of been going through a lot of my Filioque notes. I have a lot of Filioque notes. I've been going through some of my Filioque notes and taking up some other things like theological arguments for the Filioque and such. But for those who are interested, I do have an entire playlist. I'm sorry, I'm sick, so I'm probably going to cough a lot. I have a lot of playlists with specifically, well, I have a playlist with a lot of specifically Filioque videos. So if you look at my Filioque playlist, you can get everything that is there. And something else you can do is you can become a patron, because on Patreon, I will be posting it today because I'm finally finished with this chapter. We'll be moving on to the next chapter, but I will be posting chapter 3 now of Patavius. So if you just want to read it for yourself rather than getting my footnotes and little additions that I put on to what Patavius is saying, then you can go to patreon.com/militantthomist. $25 plus, they all get the PDFs, so definitely check that out. And also another benefit, and this is for any amount, is I used to answer DMs, but it kind of just, you know, gets a little bit overwhelming and then spend all my time answering DMs. It happens. So if you are a patron, though, I do answer messages on Patreon nearly 100% of the time. So if you have any questions about anything, you can go there and check that out. So today, we have a fun one, because St. Cyril is one of the central figures of the Filioque debate. St. Cyril was grabbed onto by a lot of the early Greek defenders of Filioque, like John Pekkas, Bessarion, and others. They pointed to St. Cyril's works and said, hey, look, guys, we look at St. Cyril, it's kind of obvious that he's agreeing with what the Latins are saying right now. So St. Cyril has always been a figure of contention, if you want to put it like that, because, he just obviously teaches the Filioque when you read through his works as a whole. When you just look at the language that he's using, he is just teaching the Filioque. It's that simple. We don't really need to. There's really no way that you can cope when it comes to St. Cyril. So I'm going to pull up my fun little slideshow. And what I did as a note is I do verify all of the quotes that I am using here, because Patavius, he's working in the 17th century. So sometimes things just kind of slip through, and quotes that aren't genuine, which have been used or sometimes used, it's something that happens. So I am steelmanning all of the quotes that I use. I make sure I go through and I find the Greek text, which if you are a patron, you have the Patavius thing that I'll be posting. I actually just post the Greek text and then a translation of the Greek text as well, to just show that, you know, everything's genuine, everything's good. So there are a few that kind of, he uses that aren't genuine. I don't include those. So I make sure everything's real, everything's genuine. I have searched through all the internet. So there actually might be some that are genuine that I'm looking over, because I just don't have the books in front of me. If it's scanning on the internet, then that's what I find. I don't have the complete works of St. Cyril in Greek on me right now. So Unfortunately, I can't look through those to check on the ones that aren't scanned. But yeah, everything is absolutely genuine. Because, you know, with my Ubi debate, I kind of learned my lesson. I unfortunately expected more from the people who would, the Eastern Orthodox guys who would respond to the debate. I expected a little bit more, but I should have expected a lot less, actually, because I presented pages and pages and pages and pages of quotes from Greek fathers, not only just quote mining, but actually putting them in context, showing how they fit together in various aspects, showing the flow of their argument and so on and so forth, just a bunch. And then they pointed to one questionable source, which is books 4 and 5 of St. Basil's Contra Eunomia, which I actually even clarified in the debate that it's something which is possibly not genuine, but it's something which is at least patristic because it has been used since like the days of Justinian. So it's something which is obviously patristic, even if it's kind of like, think Pseudo-Dionysius type. It's still patristic, even though it might not be from the author. And, you know, they just screamed and cried, forgery, forgery, forgery. So I really think since the screaming and crying forgery is really the only response that the Greeks have, that I just kind of, you know, give up and just throw them a bone and quadruple check my sources to make sure they're genuine. So that is what we'll be doing. And it's been like this since, you know, the medieval councils on this. It's been like this since Florence, forgery, forgery, forgery. That's the only response, because these are pretty obvious. Okay, so this is going to be in his Dogmatic Theology, De Journitate, Book 7, Chapter 3, Section 4. So this is going to be the last section we'll be going over in this chapter, obviously next chapter. So as I said, make sure you share this, make sure donate, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so who was St. Cyril of Alexandria? So St. Cyril of Alexandria, he was born in 376. He was the Pope of Alexandria. That's just a fancy word for the Patriarch of Alexandria. In the early to mid 5th century, if memory serves me right, he was the Pope of Alexandria for over 30 years. So he was in there for quite a while. He's known for his defense of the Theotokos against Nestorius, who preferred Christotokos. He was in charge of the Council of Ephesus, very important. He wrote a great number of works of his most famous ones are the ones against Nestorius and then some of his homiletics, but actually in his early life, he was most famous, I guess you could say, for his biblical commentaries. And then his masterpiece is Quod Unus Sit Christus, that Christ is one, or On the Unity of Christ, as John Baer's translation puts it. This is actually my favorite work from St. Cyril, personally. It's a dialogue work on the unity of Christ. It's very, very good. So if you were to read one work by him, either his commentary on the Gospel of John or Quod Unus Sit Christus is a great one. And then he died in 444. And I actually had a fun little interesting fact here. Not many people know this, but there are actually extant letters between Saints Cyril and Augustine that were found in some random monastery. So that's something that not many people have ever heard of. So, continuing on to the actual meat and potatoes. So, this first one is De Adoratione et Cultu in Spiritu et Veritate. And it says, how would it not be most absurd to think this? For then the soul, being immutable, would have remained as it was. And then to put it in context, this is a debate over whether our souls are somehow like little participations in the Holy Spirit, or kind of like little emanations from the substance of the Holy Spirit, weird Gnostic heebie-jeebie that he's refuting. But in fact, the soul is mutable, but the spirit is not mutable in any way. If it suffers from the weakness of mutability, this blemish would affect the nature of God itself. For he indeed is God, so that is, the spirit is God. And from and of both, notice, of both the Father and the Son. So right here says the Holy Spirit is from both the Father and the Son. He flows forth substantially from both. Notice, substantially from both. Not temporally, not energetically, substantially from both. That is, from the Father through the Son. It would therefore be foolish to think that the Holy Spirit was changeable in the soul. So first, the reason that we know this is about the filioque is from this use of ousiodos, ousiodos, ousiodos. Yeah, my Greek pronunciation is terrible. You can cry. But ousiodos, that's think ousia, if you ever heard the term ousia. So something which is here translated as substantially of, you could say like of being, but you know, that's how would we even put that in English? But yeah, substantially is just a fine language. It's talking about the ousios of God. That's the way in which it is referring to. This is obvious. Obviously, when we look at like the Nicene Creed, when it's talking about the Father and the Son of our consubstantial of one substance, homoousios, you know, it's this sort of language is being used. It's obviously talking about, you know, just as the beginning of the Son is something which is substantial from the Father, so the procession of the Holy Spirit is something which is substantial of both, saying of both right here. So this is just clear. Right here. And then also we can, from the context, see that the argument for mutability would make no sense if this was talking about something like a temporal procession, because the temporal processions or the energies which are infused into us, those are things which are mutable. So the argument for mutability wouldn't make any sense if it was talking about a merely temporal procession. Okay, I'm going to keep track of the comments. Yeah, see, look, Florence vindicated in one quote. Okay, so commentary on Joel. So he says, for in that the Son is God and of God by nature, for he is truly begotten of God the Father. The Spirit is his very own and in him and from him, just as is conceived as to God the Father. So the language of kataphusin, so phusin, think like physical. It's something which is natural, I guess would be the very best way. So when we see in the beginning, for in that the Son is God and of God by nature, so of God by nature would be kataphusin, would be the by nature part of it. And we see that this is this procession, kataphusin, which is the truly begetting or truly begotten of God the Father. So this is clearly talking about the beginning of the Son. This is being compared to the procession of the Spirit. And when it talks about the Spirit is his very own and in him and from him, just as it is conceived as to God the Father. Notice it's also comparing the procession. I didn't note this in my notes, but it's also being compared to the procession, which is the participation in the procession of God the Father to the Spirit. So this is in like three different levels. One, linguistically, kataphusin, that's obviously talking about a hypostatic procession. The second one, the comparison between begetting and inspiration, it's obviously something which is not merely energetic or temporal. This is something which is eternal. And then the third, the comparison of the Son's role to the Spirit, to the Father's to the Spirit, which is the Father's role to the Spirit, is obviously something which is natural. It's not something which is merely energetic. So, bam, right here. Yeah, actually, Diwong, later, there's a whole chapter in Petavius on why perfilium equals filioque. So this is that'll be fun. And then next in his Thesaurus de Sancta et Consubstantiali Trinitate, there's two quotes, and the second one's very interesting, but I will keep myself to the first one while we were on the first one. So it says, therefore, with Christ as lawgiver, as the Spirit naturally exists in him and from him, he himself enacts the law. There's two things that I want you guys to notice. So we see this, I put the Greek here, so this is ex autu, so from him. Phusiokos, so notice, remember, the physical, so this is natural, so of him, naturally. Uparkson. So uparkson, that actually is related to, it's kind of, I guess you could say, related to how we would think of, actually, no, I won't make that point. So uparkson, that refers to existence. So naturally, he has existence from him, that is, from the Son. Naturally, he exists from him. So something which is referring to existence, clearly, if you want to say that the Spirit has existence from the Son but isn't from the Son, I'm sorry to inform you that, you know, you're coping, because that is just, you know, a ridiculous torturing, really. It is a torturing, you're taking the rack and you're taking St. Cyril's words and you're, you know, putting it on the rack and stretching and ripping it apart. Because having natural existence from someone, when it refers to the Trinity, sorry, man, that's that's in reference to that's in reference to a hypostatic procession. I'm sorry, dude. It's just what it is. And the second one, quote, it is necessary to confess that the Spirit as of the essence, so that's that word ousios again, of the Son, for as existing, notice that existing again, uparkson, from him by nature, so ex autou kata phousin uparkson, which is kind of like ex auto phousikos uparkson, like it was last time, so referring to from him, according to nature, so above it was naturally, rather than according to nature, and then uparkson, his existence, and being sent to creation from him, it accompanies renewal, being the fulfillment of the Holy Trinity. So same type of language is being used, so same points as last time, referring to existence as something which is natural. And then also I want you to notice what's super interesting here is that you have the exaltu kataphousin uparkson, that is being distinguished. So two different clauses right here. So existing from him by nature and being sent to creation from him. So actually, with St. Cyril right here, there's an explicit distinction being made from the existence of him by nature and being sent to creation from him. So the merely economic procession of the Spirit is being distinguished from the hypostatic procession of the Spirit. So this is something which is not merely economic, because why would he distinguish between the two otherwise if he was just talking about economic? Okay, so where is the where in St. Cyril is the top quote? It's in his thesaurus, which is not translated in English. But if it was translated in English, that in his dialogues, Eastern Orthodoxy would not exist if people read it. It's actually kind of crazy. Yeah, if you go on document, let me see, where is a good copy of his thesaurus? I don't know if you are fluent in Latin, but Documenta Catholica Omnia, I will send the link right there. And actually, there's little snippets that I have. They're pretty unique snippets. So if you just type that in, the control F, the thesaurus, and type it in, you'll actually get right to the section which it's talked about. So you can actually search yourself to check me to make sure I'm not making this stuff up. I'm not making it up. But yeah, there's a link to it if anybody's interested. Okay, so next is commentary on the Gospel of John. There's actually like a million from the commentary on the Gospel of John, but I just chose this one because I think this is the most clear. So the blessed Paul, having called Spirit of Christ, that which dwelleth in us, forthwith subjoined, if Christ be in you, introducing an entire likeness of the Son with the Spirit, who is his very own and is by nature poured forth from him. So par autou kata phousin, so again, from him rather than ex autou, so out of him, kind of be, I guess, more, but from him, par autou, and again, kataphousin, so according to nature, so it's something which is by nature, natural. But I want you to notice this is actually a common argument through Cyril's dialogues and his thesaurus, and he brings it up here, obviously, in the Gospel of John, is from the sun-shaped, in my debate with Ubi, I called it the sun-shaped nature of the redemption of the Spirit. Is that the Spirit in theosis doesn't just generally conform us to the divinity, but specifically conforms us to the person of Christ. And the reason for this, as he's going to argue, is basically the argument is that you cannot give what you don't have. So you cannot conform to the substance of Christ if you did not come from the substance of Christ. So the Spirit couldn't conform us to Christ if the Spirit didn't come from Christ, and therefore the Spirit's divine. So the very argumentation for the divinity of the Spirit that St. Cyril gives is going to presuppose the filioque, which is why a million, why the filioque is so important. Okay, so, and then in the Acts of the Council of Ephesus, and this is something which is super interesting. Again, I'm just picking out the interesting bits. There's a million more quotes from St. Cyril that I could have brought up. So the Acts of the Council of Ephesus. Therefore, the giving of life must be attributed, and quite fittingly, not entirely to the nature of the body itself, even if it has become the own power of the Word begotten of God, but rather to the power of the highest, to the highest, and by a nature above creation, as in the person of God and the Father, from whom the Son has appeared, equal and alike to him in all things. Moreover, so he's named the Father and the Son, moreover, the life-giving Spirit proceeds through both. So what's super interesting here is, yeah, we have the intrinsic comparison of the begetting of the Word from the Father and the procession of the Spirit from both. But actually, what's super, super cool is the language of diumphion. And again, I've never been able to pronounce that word. But D, that right there is throw. So when perfilium comes up, it's going to be this language of D. So this language of dia, actually. D is just the short version because Greek sometimes does that and drops off the last one in preposition. But so diumphion, from both, actually through both right there. So actually, St. Cyril is saying that the Spirit proceeds through both. So through the Father and the Son. What's super cool about that? Well, usually you get from the Father through the Son, but here he's saying through both, through the Father and the Son. So obviously through is equivalent to from. If Cyril can speak of the Spirit as through the Father, obviously through isn't excluding hypostatic procession. Real, not fake at all. Okay. So yeah, that was that right there. And then the last one from the sixth dialogue where the toxis is brought up. The toxis is we're gonna get into this a lot later. Because this is just the icing on the cake when we talk about explicit things. We're gonna be getting into a lot more stuff than this. So the toxis is the ordering of the persons of the Trinity. So the Father's the first, Spirit's the second, Spirit's the third, Son's the second. But here there's clearly some sort of superiority being spoken of between the persons of the Trinity and the, and again, I'm using very analogous language that we're going to clarify later exactly what we mean by the toxis. But clearly the fromness of the Spirit makes the Spirit somehow, you know, secondary, if you want to put it like that. Again, this is very appropriate language. Don't take this too far or you're going to become an Arian. This is what he says. Then how does the Son come to us through the Spirit? And how will he, being superior in nature, infuse participation what is inferior through him? And if we become partakers of the divine nature by receiving the Spirit, how is the Son secondary to the Spirit? Or how is he better than him, and not rather being like him and having from him all his activity and imparting his participation? So he has all of his activity from him, and that is why we have the toxis between them, and imparts it to him. So again, this sort of sun-shaped redemption that is being brought up. Okay, so that's all. I think that's all. Okay, so thank you all for watching. Oh, wait, where can you read the third letter of Cyril to Nestorius? You can just look it up on Google. It's translated in English. Actually, the letters of Nestorius to Cyril actually also translated in English as well. Uniontheology.org right here. Bam. Bam, bam, bam. I think it's the okay. I'm not gonna look at the section that we're specifically talking about on stream. Okay. So thank you all. As always, God bless.